to you live from Music City, USA, aka Nashville, Tennessee. This is the Y'all Ain't a Podcast with Sebastian Starr. I'm your host, Sebastian Starr, here with my husband. Introduce yourself.
Mr. Bob Marley.
Okay, thank you. And we're going to be discussing the new Blumhouse and Lionsgate horror film, Imaginary. We literally just got out of the theaters to see it. Now, before we dive into the specifics, I want to go on the record for saying that I initially had no real interest in seeing this movie. Not because I didn't think it looked good or because I thought it was going to be kind of cheesy or stupid or whatever. It's just it didn't capture my attention the way that a horror movie that I'm more interested in watching. It didn't spark me like The Nun did. You know what I'm saying? I didn't look at it and say, ooh, that's going to be good. You know what I mean? And then we saw a couple of previews for a couple of other movies. One other one being The Omen, the new Omen movie that they're coming out with. That movie looks like it would make me shit in my pants in fear. It looks like it would give me nightmares. And so when I think of, and I only recently got into watching horror movies. I wasn't always I'm about to explain. I wasn't always interested in watching horror movies. It wasn't until the Conjuring franchise begun, back when it started. You know, I'm not sure when the first Conjuring came out, but I know it was a few years in the making. And that entire franchise, in my opinion, as far as horror movies go, and again, I'm not a horror movie buff. I haven't been watching them, but they're pretty damn scary. They're pretty damn good. And with that, I was encouraged to check out. I'm sorry, y'all. It's raining. We're in the car. And with that, I was encouraged to check out other horror movie franchises, genres. Another one that I'm really a big fan of is the Scream franchise. I'm more into the whodunit murder mystery style. That's pretty much all Scream is. I went back and rewatched some original cult classics. The first Friday the 13th, The Poltergeist. What's that one movie called? The Exorcist, you know? Movies like that. And I wanted to see, you know, if they lived up to the hype or not. So whenever a horror movie comes out nowadays, you know, I'm interested in seeing it. But again, this movie didn't settle in my soul as something that would really scare the fuck out of me. So I wasn't going in it with that expectation that it was going to scare me shitless. But more so we're going to get to that in a second. Hold on. I'm not done yet. Okay. With that being said, when we rewatched the trailer, it did look like an interesting concept for a story. But regardless of what the trailer portrayed, there were a lot of twists, turns, and things that I was still unexpecting that when I saw them, I was impressed. Now, you wanted to put your two cents in.
Yeah. So when I saw this movie, I thought it was going to be... So I meant to watch a scary movie to the dark by myself, but I was like, you got like...
Okay.
Since I was like 10 years old, back when I was before kindergarten, I was watching Nightmare on Elm Street, the original Jason, all of that with my auntie, and she wanted to really get us on to watching scary movies like that. I'm into stuff like Devil's Rejects, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, something that's going to scare you shitless.
So you like gory movies, like Hostel and Saw and shit like that?
Well, not really gory. I want that jump scare. I want something that's going... When he comes on TV, on the movie, every time you see him, it's like a grimace in your body just shaking. Not a grimace, but like a... How you say? Like... The initial fear never leaves.
That anxiety?
Yeah. And then when he's off, you're just barely coming back into, oh my gosh, this is going to be crazy. Like, you're not in the movie, but you feel all the terror they feel. Like, that's what I like. I don't want no cheesy. Now, all right, before we go into detail on the movie, I'm going to let you start off with your analysis.
Okay, yeah, I want to do an analysis and then the review. So, opening sequence, first of all, you have the main character, Jess, and obviously heavy spoilers for those of you who may be listening and who haven't seen this movie and are interested in seeing it. Obvious spoiler alert. So you have the main character, Jess, who is played by, I saw her name on the end credits, DaWanda Wise.
That's dope.
You may know her from, she was in the new Netflix reimagining of She's Gotta Have It by Spike Lee. She was the main character. She's a really good actress, so she usually plays a very, like, raunchy, go-getter, full of confidence, you know, type of female role. So seeing her in horror, I love seeing black people in horror movies, by the way. Side note, I think it's a beautiful thing. Like the young girl who was in the new Exorcist with Leslie Odom Jr., who played his daughter, she did a fantastic job. But we'll talk about the Exorcist on another day. But anyway, so Jessica, or Jess, is the main character. She has a new husband. Her husband has two daughters. One of them is a 15-year-old girl named Taylor, and the other one is a younger girl. I want to say maybe 7 or 8. They never specified her age, but I want to say 7 or 8. And her name is Alice. Ironically, I thought that her name was Alice, and I feel like that's a call to Alice in Wonderland, because she's stuck in an imaginary realm where anything can happen, and she can kind of make her own world be however she wants, kind of like Alice in Wonderland, where she's just like imagining a world of her own creation type shit. So I think that was really ironic and possibly even intentional. So Jessica is having these reoccurring dreams of being, you know, trapped in like the back room lore, but like a horror version. So instead of it being like always, you're chasing after her. Now, ironically, she has used this wild imagination of hers to be a creative mogul, my bad, my apologies. And she is an author of children's books. So the spider character that she sees in her dreams, she's turned them into a character in one of her children's books. Her children's books are very popular. She's very successful. This, that, and the third. Her and her new family are moving into her old childhood home that I'm assuming she inherited at some point, or she bought it back.
Her mom died and her dad went crazy, I guess. Spoiler alert on why he did that.
We'll get to the end of that. I don't want you to tell it just yet. So they move back into the old house. She's starting to feel a little bit better. The young daughter, and it is important to note that the children's mother is like a mental patient. She's very unstable. She's hurt the children before, and they don't have any kind of real contact with her. So the youngest daughter, Alice, has scars all over her arm from when her mother attacked her, and she's, you know, seeing a therapist and all this stuff. So they get to the house. Alice finds a teddy bear in the basement of the house that she discovers is named Chauncey. And she's like, this is my new friend. His name is Chauncey, and he's a little teddy bear. And, you know, she just goes on to play with him instead of trying to play with Alice. I mean, not with Alice, but with Jessica. So, and then, of course, the teenager just being a teenager, rebellious.
Yeah, because Jessica went outside on the call and stayed out there for a long
time. Well, yeah, so they were playing hide and seek. We're not going into every single detail. We're just kind of getting the... But, yeah, they were playing hide and seek. They just kind of take a phone call. Alice went wandering off into the basement, found the teddy bear, and that's kind of where our real story begins. So throughout the duration of the film, you're just hearing Alice saying, oh, well, Chauncey and I are doing this, and we're playing that, and we're going on a little scavenger hunt. We have to find these items, but I can't tell you too much about it because it's our special game type shit. Whatever. Okay. Side note, because it's going to matter later, there's also this random neighbor. I believe her name was Gloria.
Yeah.
Old white lady who kind of starts popping up after they get reintroduced to the neighborhood type shit. So as the movie progresses, you're seeing more and more acting out from Alice, which is out of character for her. And you hear her speaking in the quote-unquote Chauncey the Bear voice to herself in her bedroom. Eventually, though, she tries to hurt herself by impaling her hand into a rusty nail, very much Butterfly Effect style. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Google it. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, don't
you?
Yeah. He was in jail.
Okay, well, no.
Yeah, he was in jail with the dude. He was reading the book. He went back to his classroom. and he did the things with the two little pieces.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Google, for Googling it. But anyway, so after that, Jess calls her therapist in and is like, we need to have her talk out what's going on, because now she's trying to hurt herself. And it's revealed that the Chauncey voice that Alice was doing was not coming from Alice, but from an unseen entity somewhere in the room. First plot twist, which fucked me up. I'm not going to hold you. This fucked me up. First plot twist. The teddy bear that Alice finds in the basement never existed. There was never a teddy bear. She never had a physical bear in her possession while she's playing these imaginary games with Chauncey. Chauncey is just an entity. The bear was a figment of Alice and Jessica's imagination.
I wanted to say that, but
fuck. Oh, I'm sorry. I saw your hand up, but I thought you were going to add a side note to it.
I was.
That was it? Okay, my apologies. So, plot twist number one. The bear never existed. As they realize that Jessica is retracing her childhood steps, because everything that Alice is doing sounds very familiar to her.
The only way they found that out is by blow your crazy ass. That motherfucker here. How you gonna lose a child?
Okay, well, hold on. Let me lead you into that. So at some point, Alice disappears. After the therapy session, after the therapist leaves, after Jessica realized the teddy bear was never real, Alice disappears. Gloria pops up on Taylor, the big sister, and says, I think I might know where Alice is.
And then crazy motherfucker show her that she been studying everything that she went through with fucking Jessica and became like a fucking physical scientist person, like Neil deGrasse Tyson.
He's an astrophysicist.
Whatever it's called. And did the little smart stuff and learned about it. Now she's infatuated. She hears Charlie. She hears the entity. She don't see
Chauncey.
She don't see him, but she hears it. And it tells her to get all three.
Okay, well, hold on. You're getting too ahead of yourself. You're missing some details.
Okay.
So before we get there, because I know that you're excited about that part, because it blew me too. That's plot twist number two. So before we get to plot twist number two, like we said, Gloria takes Taylor, the big sister, into her house and shows her all of the studies that she's been doing for decades. Because for context, Gloria used to babysit Jessica when Jessica lived in that house when she was a little girl, and claims that Jessica disappeared into a portal to an unknown realm. She was scared to go in. She couldn't explain it to nobody. Everybody thought she was crazy. And that's when her obsession with this other world began. And so they realized that the imaginary friend that Jessica had when she was a little girl is the same imaginary friend that Alice has been dealing with since they moved back into the house. So with that, they follow the scavenger hunt list, start the ritual, quote unquote, back up, and open up the door to this other realm. The same realm that Jessica had gotten lost in when she was a little girl. The same realm that Gloria, the old woman, saw her walk into, but was too afraid to follow in after her. And the same realm where Alice, the little sister, has now gotten lost into. Now
she wasn't lost.
Well, they thought they couldn't find her, so you can't find something that's lost. But yeah. Now we're at plot twist number two. So explain to us plot twist number two.
Gloria has been, I guess, getting mandango by the entity in the mind because she's so obsessed with it. She I guess makes a pact with it and say she'll bring Jessica back. And she would like to stay there forever. It got her into thinking that she would have a nice life in this imaginary world.
Because in this world, you can create whatever. It's like being in a dream. Yeah. So a lucid dream. So if you are in a lucid dream, you can control pretty much what happens. You can make anything appear. You can change however you see things. Everything is exactly how you want it to be. You can do whatever you want in a dream type shit. So Gloria, I guess, makes a deal with this deity, this entity that has, you know, attached itself to Alice, and she closes the portal. So now they can't get out. They were going to go in there to originally look for Alice, but now they can't. They're stuck. And she goes into this long, detailed, elaborate speech on, this is going to be great. We're all here together. We can do whatever we want. Anything that we can imagine will be our reality here. It's the most perfect situation to be in. This Chauncey deity wanted me to bring all of us here so that we could all be happy and get whatever we want. And she's so excited to get started with this brand new world of venture and opportunity, only to get snatched the fuck up by the teddy bear entity monster. It's like the monster in question is the teddy bear, but it's like if the teddy bear, became a vicious creature thing.
It looked like the Five Nights
of Freddy's. Yeah, he looked, which makes sense because Blumhouse also did Five Nights at Freddy's. So it was like one of them, but like in monster mode with the sharp teeth, the claws, the all that shit.
Long limbs.
Yeah, it completely snatched Gloria ass off of the floor, pulled her into the room, and smashed and passed this bitch into a puddle of blood. And it was just like, I wasn't expecting that to happen. Like, I wasn't prepared for that moment. So that was plot twist number two. The fact that she tricked them into going into this world and then ended up getting killed immediately after she got good and comfortable fucked me up. So now it's Jess and Taylor, and they're looking for Atlas. They're walking around, opening up all of these doors, getting locked in it. At the same time, Chauncey, the imaginary friend, is trying to hunt them down and kill them.
And they get separated.
They get separated because Taylor Goofy Ass, again, is the rebellious, I don't want to listen to my stepmom ass teenager, runs off, gets stuck in a room, and she almost got by this Fazbear Freddy's animatronic ass monster. So, but thankfully, Jess comes in the nick of time, gets her out, saves the day. And she's like, look, we're going to stay together unless I tell you otherwise, okay? And she's like, I understand. I ain't finna fuck with this no more. So eventually they find where Alice has manifested her perfect world. And it's their old apartment before their mom got sick, before their dad got remarried. And she has everything she could ever want. Cakes and gifts and a beautiful princess dress and a tiara.
And a all puppy.
Yeah, and a puppy. Like, she done set up. She's at home. She's cozy. She even manifested a clean and healthy version of her mom to be there. And, you know, everything looks good. But then it's like, nah, man, this isn't real. This isn't real life. We can't stay here. You know what I'm saying? Like, we got to get the fuck out. So Jess gets the great idea. Okay, if our imagination can run wild here, I can just imagine another portal door to get us out. So that's what she does. She takes anything blue and sticks it to the wall in the shape of a box. And that box becomes the new portal out. So they get the portal door open. Of course, the imaginary entities is like, nah, y'all trying to leave. Y'all can't leave. And then they go super psycho mode and try to kill everybody. Alice and Taylor get out. Jess is like, run, run, run as fast as you can. And she grabs some scissors, try to attack the teddy bear monster. Obviously, that doesn't fucking work because it's a teddy bear monster. This motherfucker is like 6'8", 320. And she's petite, 5'5". You know what I'm saying? She don't stand a chance. So she gets out, breaks her ankle in the process, gets to limping around the imaginary realm, and tries to get another portal door open. Now, plot twist number three. She gets the portal door open. Alice and Taylor on the other side pull her out. They seal the door up. They go home. Everything's hunky-dory, fine and dandy. We go to where Jessica's father is. He's in like an old folks home because he lost his mind trying to save her from that imaginary realm.
Well,
and now he's there.
The deity's eyes,
yeah, bro. Or you'll go crazy type shit. So he did that trying to rescue her. And now he's in like a mental facility for old people. So she's there reading one of her children's books to him because he always followed her career and was very proud of her. And, you know, her whole new family is there. Her husband, the two girls. And they're like, you know, we never thanked you for getting us out of that situation. I'm so sorry that, you know, I never believed that you really loved us like that. And Alice is like, thank you, Mom. Real sentimental, sweet shit.
She got to prodding around like, let me see if this is real. So Alice has a scar, I guess, from what happened with her mom inflicted on her or whatever. And it's on her arm. It's a big one. You can't miss it.
Ironically, Jess has a similar scar on her arm in the same spot. So and she looks down at her scar, and then she... Go ahead. What does she do?
She lifts up Alice's sleeve, and that bitch is gone. Like,
the scar is not there. And she looks around and she realizes, I never left. I'm still here. And then they all get the teddy bear eyeballs and they got the demonic voice talking. You are still here because you were never meant to leave in the first place. You got out when you was little. We not going to let that shit happen again. You're not going anywhere.
Or I will kill your family.
And yeah, if you try to escape again, we'll go after both of the girls. We'll kill them. And we'll still bring your ass back in here. So you better just learn to be happy. She accepts this. She accepts it. She says, okay, I'll stay. Just leave those girls alone. Plot twist number 4.
Here I go. Then she come in. Nah, bitch.
You got to specify who.
Oh, what's the oldest girl name?
Taylor.
Taylor. Nah, bitch, it's my mommy. Smack, come on, grab her out of there. And then she leads her back to the old door, which they reopened. Well,
yeah, they got it back open.
Yeah, they got it back open and came and got her ass.
Which I wasn't expecting that either. I was ready for the acceptance of the fate here at this point. So they get her out through the original portal. They seal it back up. But then the fucking monster that she's been seeing in her dreams, the spider creature, which is the actual representation of her imaginary friend Chauncey, is not this teddy bear thing. It's kind of like possesses the teddy bear form, but it's really this like giant spider creature. So that thing hulks its ass through the fucking portal, grabs Jess and tries to pull her back in. And then she got the looking into his eyes and she almost loses her mind. And then Taylor goofy ass is looking and both of them is in a trance. It's like, ah shit, they both finna get their minds wiped and crazy and shit. In the process of their tussle, they knock over, what is it, lighter fluid?
Yeah.
And then Alice...
No, I think it was paint thinner. Then okay, this paint little thinner. Girl, Alice, like, yep, fuck you. You should burn. Boom.
She lights the match, sets the whole motherfucking house on fire. In the process, but it destroys the portal. It gets rid of the monster. Everything is cool.
No, it didn't.
Well, you're getting ahead. Shit. It destroys the house. It destroys the porter. It gets rid of the monster. They get the ambulance called and they go to the hospital. They get checked out. So the final scene of the movie, which is plot twist number 5, we see them checking into a hotel or attempting to check into a hotel. Alice got an ankle brace on because remember she broke her foot. The girls are wrapped up in the medical blankets that the firefighters give you when they rescue you from a house. And Alice notices it first. There's a little pair of teddy bear ears sitting up behind a chair in the hotel lobby. All three of them turn to look and see these teddy bear ears. It's like, okay, I see that teddy bear. That teddy bear is real. And then you see a mom come around the corner. Her son is in the chair with the little teddy bear. And the little boy says, what is the little teddy bear? It's like Ralph or something like that.
Yeah,
it's like, Ralph got in here all by itself. And she was like, sure you did, honey. Come on, let's go check in.
And then one thing about the thing that he said, that her friend was always hungry too.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boy says,
I'm always hungry. He always wants something to eat. And then the mama of the little boy in the hotel is like, this is a stuffed animal. This is an imaginary friend. He can't get hungry. And he's like, no, he's not imaginary. He's real. And the final shot of the movie is the Ralph teddy bear gets transformed into the original Chauncey teddy bear been seeing this whole time. And as Alice limps past the window, see her silhouette passing the Chauncey teddy bear as if to say, I'm still watching you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the movie ends. So that was plot twist number 5 there. So 5 major plot twists in this crazy ass movie. I personally am a humongo fan of good plot twists. And this movie had 5 of them.
Yeah.
And none of them was I prepared for. You know what I'm saying? Like, just when you think the movie was over with, they came back in. Because the scene where she went to the old folks' home to read to her father, you felt like that was the final scene of the movie.
Yeah, I was pissed off.
Yeah, you were like, man, whatever. And then when she moves the sleeve back, and I'm thinking to myself, huh? And then she, and another thing that I love about DaWanda Wise's character in this movie, first of all, I felt like...
She's smart as fuck.
But I also felt like this movie could have been played by a white woman, but it wouldn't have went the way that it did.
No.
Because the thing about black people, black women specifically, is they got this way of thinking, processing internal thoughts as logic or illogical, rational or irrational. And whenever a moment occurred that seemed illogical or irrational or impossible, she would look on her face like, what the fuck? That's not right. And that is the most realist reaction to some shit that don't make sense. That, and I felt that that is realism. Obviously, you're concerned about your stepchildren. You want them to feel, you know, safe, protected in your care and custody. But you ain't gonna skip past weird shit if you see it or hear it. So, for example, there was a scene where Alice was having a little tea party in her room. Her mom, her original, her birth mom, had snuck out of the mental hospital and snuck into her bedroom and was having this pretend tea party with her. Now, Alice is talking, giving an imaginary friend, quote unquote, some compliments about their clothes. And then she hears faintly a woman say, thank you. And the look on her face was like, what the fuck was that? Like, there shouldn't be nobody in that room. So who the fuck just said thank you? And
it's not even that. It's like when she moved back, she said, he's behind you.
Uh-huh.
She told Alice to tell, she could see the deity.
Yes, she can.
Like, and she told Alice. And Alice told, what's her name? Jessica, Jamie?
Yeah, Alice, Jessica is the black woman's name, yes.
Jessica.
Yeah, that's the main character.
And before she turned around, someone was back there.
Yeah. And then the crazy mama jumped out. Was like, I have to protect my girls. There's something in this house. Which, yeah, she couldn't have been that damn crazy if she knew that. But anyway.
Completely.
It was what turned out. Taylor was texting her mom. And she was like, I thought she was getting better. I didn't mean for her to hurt her. I'm sorry. So, which just further implies that the mom is a dangerous character. And the children aren't safe in her presence. There were a lot of moments like that. A lot of little moments where you could just see the look on her face like, what the fuck? That's not right. And that just made me feel like, yeah, she a real... Because even though she did a lot of dumb, quote-unquote, white people shit, like investigating noises and going to the basement by herself, you also have to keep in mind, this is her childhood home. She grew up here. You know what I'm saying? She feels the most comfortable, the most safe, the most secure in this house. She ain't got no reason to be scared to go into her own basement. You know what I mean? That's like me going to my daddy's house and being afraid to go into the attic. Like, no, I've been here my whole life. I'm not gonna fucking act like I'm scared to go up there, because I'm not. So, and another thing that I can appreciate were the scary moments, which you said that you wish that there were more jump scares. This movie didn't really need a whole lot of them, because the moments that did make you go, oh my God, were very, very subtle. That entity, that spider creature, was always kind of lurking in the background. If you miss it, you know, if you blink, you're gonna miss it type shit. But it's always in the scenery, in the background, watching and waiting, you know. So those subtle moments were scary enough for me, because it's like a silent scare. And those are worse, because if you're not paying attention, you can get got just like, you know what I'm saying? So I'm so sorry. I poked you in the eye. So my overall review, that was the analysis, basically. The overall review, I mean, if I'm rating this movie 1 through 10, I give it a strong 7.8. It was good. I enjoyed it. The plot twists were interesting. They were engaging. And the last, like, 15, 20 minutes kept me on the edge of my seat. And it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. I didn't think it was going to be worth watching, but I definitely would recommend it. Like, it's a strong 7.8.
I ain't gonna lie, I give it a 7.5. Just because, like I said, when I'm looking into a scary movie, I want something that freaks me out. I gotta look around.
You want something that's gonna make you paranoid?
Yeah, I want something that's gonna make me paranoid. Sit in the house like, man, do I hear a teddy bear? I'll be high as shit, but hey.
I mean, but yeah. And there's nothing wrong with movies like that, but I think every once in a while it's refreshing to have a scary movie that can be scary without making you paranoid. Like a movie that makes me paranoid would be like The Nun 1. Like, that movie made me paranoid. Nope. Even though Nope isn't really like, well, it's considered a horror movie, yeah. That movie made me paranoid. Nope and Us both made me very, very paranoid.
Yeah, I love movies. That nigga Jordan Peele, shout out to that guy. Yeah, he's Monkey Fist, Monkey Paw.
Monkey Paw. Monkey Fist.
Yeah.
Monkey Fist.
Yeah, man.
Okay. Anyway, those movies made me very, very paranoid. But this movie, kind of like Five Nights at Freddy's, where the moments of horror were silent, but they were good enough to make me go, oh my God, like, that's fucked up. And especially when that old woman died. That really... I was not ready for that woman to get her face chomped off. Like, that, it fucked me up. I'm not going to hold you. It really, really did. And I wasn't ready for it. But I'm also kind of glad that it happened, because she tricked them into going back in there. And she was prepared to risk it all over a fantasy. Which I feel like is kind of telling, you know, what you would do to, what you were willing to sacrifice for the sake of your own, I don't know what to call it, you know, but you know what niggas do when they just desperate. And clearly she's been following this story, this case, this ideology for a long ass time. So now that she finally got it, she thought that everything was going to be perfect, and she just ended up dying right afterwards. Like, that's fucked up. But no, I liked it. I thought it was good. I hated that. This is the last thing that I'm going to say. I hated that the father was just a bridge to connect Jessica to the daughters, because he checked out. He checked out like 30 minutes into the movie. The movie is almost 2 hours long. He was gone after the first like 25 minutes.
And she only called him once.
And the moments that he was there, he didn't even do nothing. Like,
he didn't get no action at all.
Like, they got into the house. She taking Allie into her old childhood room, is like, you want this to be your room? And the big sister's like, nah, we're going to find her own room. That's our thing. Don't worry about her. She cool. The dad is standing right there and ain't say shit. First of all, you're not going to disrespect my wife like this. Second of all, who the hell do you think you are? Because we didn't have to come here. You know what I mean? Like, it was just rude. And then he just fucking left.
I have to tour, babe.
She called him one time after the little girl tried to hurt herself. And when the big sister invited the stupid-ass neighborhood boy over to her house, he broke the alcohol bottles and tried to give her Molly, which turned out to be fucking allergy medicine. Like, it was just a lot of shit. And then this nigga just disappeared. So that bothered me, that the dad was nowhere to be seen after the first 30 minutes of this movie. But I guess he wasn't really important. No way. So I guess he really didn't need to be in the movie like that. Do you have any final thoughts? Any last minute?
No, good movie. It's just not scary. And that's what does it for me. I mean, action movie, I want a lot of gunshots, a lot of explosions, people dying, bullet holes, you know, bleeding.
And for a horror movie, you expect for you to shit your pants.
Silence of the Lamb.
Okay, I haven't seen Silence of the Lamb yet, so I can't tell you. But like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
You want niggas getting dismembered and, or the House of Wax. You like House of Wax? House of Wax
was the shit.
We ain't got to talk about House of Wax, but you like House of Wax. Like, that's your idea of a horror movie. So the psychological thrillers don't really do it for you.
I mean, they do. It got to be hella deep psychological shit. Like, somebody's got to be the mayor of the town, and they ain't the mayor of the town. They just...
Like, somebody, like us.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, like us.
Yeah.
You've seen us, right? You know the plot twist in that movie. Okay, so you want some shit like that.
Hell yeah.
Okay.
Fuck me up. Like,
and that movie is fucked up. The movie's real fucked up. But anyway, that was our two cents on the movie Imaginary. Blumhouse, Lionsgate film. I think Wadlow is the director of that.
Yeah.
That's a weird ass name, but kudos to you, Wadlow. Kudos to DaWanda. Her name is DaWanda. Her name is DaWanda. Anyway. I'm sorry. DaWanda. I'm sorry. Shout out to DaWanda Wise for doing a fantastic job and joining the short yet growing list of black people that make it to the end of horror movies. that list is slowly getting bigger every year. They keep adding.
Ice Cube was the first.
It was either Ice Cube or LL Cool J. It was one of them two. But the list is getting longer and longer every year. So kudos to the black people who survive in horror movies. Thanks for those who are coming in.
Hey, Scary Movie 6. The big black dude. The buff black dude.
And his sister.
Yeah, and his sister.
They both survive. Oh, sorry if y'all haven't seen Scary Movie 6. Which I should have seen it by now. The movie 2 years old. But anyway, thanks for everyone who came in to check this piece out. And until next time, we will speak to you all later.